good morning and welcome to the first edition of Utah Politics Now. A new public affairs being produced by KPCW every Thursday between now and the Thursday following Election Day, of course, November 8th. I'm Leslie Thatcher.
And I'm Renee Bodley. Over the course of the next 7 weeks, Utah Politics Now will feature head-to-head debates with legislative candidates from the two Utah House districts representing Summit and Wasatch counties. We will include candidate interviews for those running for the Summit County Council and Park City School Board. We will also examine bond issues, polling, and political commentary from leading Utah political thinkers from both major parties. Utah Politics Now will also include the voter's perspective. We'll have live phone calls from listeners being fielded during the last segment of this show. The show will provide listeners with an informed outlook on issues that directly affect our community. Each program will be posted on kpcw.org website. You can listen to it on demand.
It's 10:07. We'll be back with our guests right after this.
Hi, this is Angela from Peak Art and Frame, longtime supporters of KPCW. Peak Art and Frame offers custom picture framing, rush options, hanging and delivery services, and in-house designers. Open Monday through Saturday, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
Executive Chef Todd Cosgrove here with Park Meadows Country Club, a KPCW supporter. Park Meadows prepares seasonally inspired menus in our dining room, lounge, and outdoor patio areas year-round. We also offer members dining menus for social events throughout the year. Social and golf memberships are available. 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, parkcitybikedemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
It's 10:08, and good morning. Well, for our inaugural show here on Utah Politics Now, we've brought together the candidates running for House District 54, which represents the municipal boundaries of Park City, as well as all of Wasatch County. Both of them are political newcomers and are looking to fill the seat of Republican Craig Powell, who decided to drop out of the race. Rudy Kohler is the Democratic candidate and Wasatch County resident. Tim Quinn, the Republican candidate, a businessman who also lives in Wasatch County. We'll let you let them tell more about themselves in just a minute.
We're also going to talk about the issues that affect you and your family, education, environment, public lands, and even what we call the vice block, specific questions about Utah liquor laws, marijuana laws, specifically medical marijuana, which was a very big issue in last year's legislative session, death with dignity laws, and sex education. If you're listening right now and you've got a question, you can call it in later in this show. The direct number to our studio is 435-655-TALK. That's 435-655-8255. We will open the phone lines around 10:45. First, we flipped a coin to choose who will go first with their opening statement and first with their closing statement. Tim Quinn, you won that coin toss. You opted to go second in both occasions. Rudy, we'll start with your opening statement.
Okay, wonderful. I want to thank both of you for inviting me here. My name's Rudy Kohler, and I'm running to be your representative for the Utah House District 54. Prior to moving to Heber, I was a chemical engineer with the nation's largest industrial gas company, where I worked as the market manager for a billion-dollar segment of the company. My job was literally ensuring things got done. I understand business. Government needs to be for the benefit of the community and accountable to the citizens, both in making laws and administrating them for the good and the safety of society. An effective government is a fundamental requirement for a healthy, prosperous, well-educated, and safe Utah. The only way we can satisfy this requirement is to work together, a philosophy I call we, not me. As your representative, I'll have your back and work for you to make sure that we nurture a competitive workforce with self-reliant wages. We ensure that all Utahns have access to quality health care. We protect our recreational areas, clean air, and clean water. We invest in our state's future by demonstrating that education is our top priority.
Thank you, Rudy. That was about a minute and 10 seconds, Tim, so we'll let you take as much time.
Thank you. My name is Tim Quinn. I also live in Heber City. My family and I moved from Atlanta, Georgia about 17 years ago. We have eight children. and 18 grandchildren. One of the reasons I'm running is I think that Utah has so many positives going for it. We are number one in so many areas, number one in business and business creation. We do very well when it comes to unemployment. We have an unemployment rate that's 3.7%, much lower than the national average. And I think there's reasons that we've done that. We've lowered our tax rates, not only individually, but for the corporations as well. We've kept our regulations on businesses relatively low. And when we do that, it fosters an environment where businesses can hire, businesses can expand. And when we expand and hire more people, revenues increase, and it creates a better lifestyle for all of us. So when I go to the legislature, I hope to be able to go to the legislature as your representative. We will continue to do many of the things that Utah has done, as well as try to increase funding for education in a responsible way.
Okay, I always love to start these off with the money question. I'd like to know how much money you've raised and who your top three competitors are. Tim?
When you say top three competitors?
Contributors.
Contributors, okay. To be honest, I couldn't give you an exact amount of what I raised because I haven't looked into my account lately, but I would guess somewhere around $9,000 or $10,000. My top contributor was the Wasatch County Republican Party and several members of the legislature.
Okay. And you, Rudy?
Yes. We have raised about over $20,000 from over 120 different contributors. The top contributor to my campaign has been the Democratic Party, as well as individual legislators within the party.
Just to follow up on that, we looked up your itemized contributions list from the Lieutenant Governor's Office. Our Lieutenant Governor's Office is the one that oversees our elections in the state. And Tim, it shows that you have 13 itemized contributions, the highest being $2,000 from the Utah Association of Realtors.
That is correct.
And second is Wasatch County Republican Party. And then, Rudy, we show that compared to Tim's 13 itemized contributions, you have 106.
That's about right. I might have been a little bit off.
Yeah, and your highest does appear to be $1,000 from the Committee for a Democratic Majority, and you also have $1,000 from Utah Progressives, Inc. Can you talk about the difference, Rudy, 106 contributors for you versus 13 for Tim?
Well, I certainly can't speak for Tim, but we're finding a lot of grassroots support in our campaign, and I'm very pleased. I find people that are just coming out of people that I barely know that have been willing to both volunteer their time for our campaign and to contribute. Very, very proud of our supporters and our staff at Wasatch County Democratic Party.
And you have about a total of over $20,000 in these contributions. And Tim, this shows about $5,000 from your 13 contributors. Why only 13?
We haven't pursued donations from individuals. I think one of the problems is in this district, this district has been held by a Republican for decades. And I think that they think it's going to be held that way again, whether or not the Republican candidate puts forth much of a race. I don't think this race is about money. I think it's about ideas and ideology. And Rudy and I, you asked the question earlier off the air, have we debated on the local Heber radio station? And we have twice. We've debated in another forum as well. There's a big contrast between Rudy and I. No one would ever make the mistake of saying that he and I are alike politically. So I don't think that this campaign is going to be decided about money and who has the most to spend. It's about whose ideas resonate with the population the most.
Let's move on to those ideas. We're going to start with what we called our vice block. We're going to start with liquor laws. Seems everyone in Utah has an opinion about our liquor laws in Utah. Those in the hospitality and tourism industry, of which there are many in Park City, would like to see those laws relaxed. But the conservative majority in Utah, many of them members of the Mormon Church, want to discourage consumption of alcohol. An attempt to remove the Zion curtain failed in the legislature this year. The curtain is a 7-foot barrier in bars and restaurants between bartenders and the public. The intent is to prevent minors from seeing drinks being made. Some of the political leaders, including Republicans, say it looks weird and it makes Utah look archaic and needs to go away. But others have said it's better to shelve this measure and take a more comprehensive look at liquor laws in the interim session. Tim, let's start with you. Would you like to see the Zion Curtain stay or go, or why?
Well, let me first off start by saying that a lot of people have talked about the liquor laws in Utah as being archaic, and perhaps there are some areas that we could improve on. But if you look nationally at the number of alcohol-related vehicle deaths on our highways, we rank 50th out of 50. And that's a statistic I think we can all be proud of. Would I be willing to look at the Zion wall as it applies to liquor laws? I would, but I think we need to do it in, like you just said, in a comprehensive way. One of the things that concerns me about, here's the three areas that concern me about alcohol. One is underage drinking, one is alcohol abuse, and the other is drunk driving. If we can create our laws that actually affect those three areas, then I would support them. One of the things specifically that troubles me is youth drinking, underage drinking. And we see a lot of TV ads these days about hard lemonade or hard cider or hard other drinks. And when you go to the grocery store, you really have to pay attention to see if that hard drink has liquor in it, has alcohol in it. I think that we could make some advances in that area while relaxing our Zion Wall area. So I think we could do things that the tourist industry here in Park City would be appreciative of as far as the Zion Wall, but yet still address the underage drinking and alcohol abuse areas.
Rudy, what do you think of the Zion Curtain?
I quite frankly think it's silly. It serves no real function. I do agree with Mr. Quinn in terms of underage drinking and DWI, DUI. That is a problem. I would not encourage the drinking of alcohol, but some of the laws, and I believe even the incumbent Craig Powell looked into this, and he thought it was a silly law too. So let's have sensible laws on alcohol, but get rid of the silly stuff.
Tim, I want to just follow up here. You have told us that you'll listen to all of your constituents, but you will make your decisions based on what you call the Republican platform principles. And I would say one of those Republican platforms would certainly be supporting small business. In that case, then, who do you take direction from? The Mormon Church for limiting liquor licenses, or from constituents who may want to open up a restaurant and knows that to be successful, they would have to sell booze?
Well, I'm not sure what the Mormon Church's political stance are on the issuance of liquor laws, or liquor licenses, as you said. So I don't know that I could take any lead from them not knowing what their position is. But as I've said, there's three main concerns that I have. And first of all, let me just correct one thing. And I may have misspoke, or you may have written it down incorrectly. I will listen to my constituents, but then I will base my decisions on my principles, not the Republican platform principles. But as far as liquor laws, like I said, if we can accomplish...
Well, I think licenses in particular.
Licenses
in particular?
Because
they won't issue anymore, and there are many businesses out there wanting a liquor license, and yet the legislature won't open it up.
And as long as those facilities or those anticipated facilities fall within the statutes that we have in the state or statutes that we may change, then I would not be opposed to that.
Medical marijuana. This issue drew more attention than probably any other in the past legislative session. Two bills would essentially legalize cannabis oil or medical marijuana for patients suffering from specific conditions. It failed. There seemed to be growing bipartisan support for it, then a strong statement of opposition from the LDS Church. 23 other states in the country have passed similar measures. Now, with the state declaring even this week Opioid Awareness Week, Utah being fourth in the country for opioid overdoses, pot may be a solution. So what, Rudy, is your opinion of medical marijuana?
I'm glad you drew the relationship between the opioid addiction and medical marijuana. There's a clear distinction as to which is the greater problem. And in my feeling, the opioid addiction is a far greater problem that we need to address as compared to medical marijuana. I personally know people that have benefited from medical marijuana, and they claim that it's turned their lives around. The fact that it has been studied both in many other states, here in the U.S., it's been studied overseas and such, I am going to come out solidly in favor of medical marijuana, but I do want to draw a distinction between medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. I don't think Utah is ready for recreational marijuana.
Doctor told us earlier this week, just as a follow-up, that the legislature can't legislate medicine. So, I mean, when you talk about opioids, I mean, what are you talking about in terms of becoming a state representative?
I think we need, at the very least, I recognizing you can't legislate medicine, we need to have more social programs recognizing the problems with the opioid addiction, and wherever possible, make it more difficult for people to get opioids for recreational use. They have a solid use, you know, no question, but let's keep it out of the hands of people who want it for recreational use.
All right, Tim, your position on medical marijuana?
First of all, that measure didn't fail this past year in the legislature. It did pass the Senate by a vote of 17 to 12. It got late. It was received by the House of Representatives late and didn't come up for a vote. I feel certain that it will again come up this legislative session. As far as the medical use for marijuana, I'm not opposed to it as long as it's regulated properly. But we do realize, because of what you just stated, the opioid problem, even drugs that are regulated and prescribed by competent medical professionals can still be abused. I'm glad to hear that my opponent disagrees with recreational use, because I do as well. We're seeing in Colorado some unintended consequences and some problems that they're having with that use.
Let's move on to sex education. Utah's current law, passed in 1988, mandates medically accurate sex ed classes in schools, but requires stressing abstinence-only instruction. The law stipulates that health education teachers cannot discuss intercourse nor positively discuss homosexuality. It also forbids any demonstration on how to use condoms and prohibits teachers from answering any student question in a way that conflicts with those requirements. Last year, House Democratic leader Brian King introduced a bill that would allow comprehensive sex education. His bill would allow parents to opt in their children to that education, which would include instruction on all methods to prevent unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases and infections, including HIV and AIDS. King stressed that we have a growing incident rate of sexually transmitted diseases, yet Gail Ruzicka with Eagle Forum says the statistics play in her favor, which is we have one of the lowest rates of teen pregnancy. So, Rudy, your stance on sex education.
Right. I have to relate it in terms of do we have a problem? And the problem is yes. The United States, and I can't speak for Utah specifically, and Utah is a little different because of the strong religious aspect, but we have one of the highest rates of teen pregnancy of any of the industrialized advanced nations. Part of it is because we just don't adequately teach our kids more about sex education, and especially not only in terms of the procreation part, but in terms of the disease prevention. So, yes, I know Brian King very well, and I would stand strongly behind a more supportive attitude towards sex education.
Tim.
I am glad to hear that in Brian's bill it was an opt-in. I think that is an important function of having it opt-in as opposed to opt-out. One of the measures that came before the legislature in the past sessions failed 64 to 11, so it was overwhelmingly defeated. I think the problem that I have with comprehensive sex education in the schools is that it removes that opportunity, and I believe that responsibility, from parents. And I think that's where that primary responsibility lies. Now, a lot of my constituents have said, yeah, Tim, but what about parents who won't take that responsibility seriously, or parents who are absent in the home? I think that there can be some middle ground, there can be a compromise, and certainly having an opt-in would help help me be supportive of that as opposed to an opt-out.
A reminder that we'll be taking your questions at 10:45. You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW. It's 10:25.
Hi, this is Brenda with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage collection, and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Thank you for helping to keep Summit County clean and green. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Hi, I'm Joe Simmons with the Park City High School. Stay in touch with all things minors with our weekly Minor Nation Report. We'll bring it to you every Monday morning during Morning News with Leslie Thatcher, and in the afternoon with The Local View with Randy Barton. Highlights, scores, schedules, all things Park City Minors athletics. The Minor Nation Report is brought to you in part by the Park City UPS Stores, Elliott Work Group, U.S. Bank Park City, and Miller Orthodontics.
This Lost and Found report is brought to you in part by Realtor Julie Hopkins at jhparkcity.com, 901-0616. Park City Title Company, providing escrow services in Summit and Wasatch Counties, 649-8322. And Intermountain Mortgage Company, local lending solution since 1992, 649-6660.
And you're listening to Utah Politics Now. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Renee Bodley. Well, in the studio with us, we have the candidates running for House of Representatives here in the state of Utah. We've got the Republican Tim Quinn and the Democrat Rudy Kohler. This is for District 54. Well, with education one of the most expensive budget items of the state every year and the biggest line item on our property tax bills, let's get to this issue. The growth is coming. According to Envision Utah, Utah's population has doubled in the last 30 years and projected to add another 2.5 million people by the year 2060. That's a bunch of kids to put through our education system. Tim, let's start with you. What are your ideas for how to pay to educate all of the students that the growth will bring? Right now, again, it's property taxes.
Right. Well, and $4.5 billion from the state budget is allotted to public education. I think that it is a problem. It is a concern. We are a state that offers such a good lifestyle that people will continue to move here and flock here. So as a legislature, we do have to be concerned about the funding for education. I don't think that raising taxes is the answer. I've looked at a study from 2000 to 2016. Utah used to have what we call a progressive tax rate. The more you make, the more you pay as a percentage. We changed that in 2007. We went to a flat tax. From a per capita standpoint, we now receive more revenue per capita than we did in 2007 or 2006 and 5 when it was on a progressive rate. So I think we keep the tax rate as it is. We encourage businesses to come here. We expand our workforce, and by that way, we increase revenue. I do think, though, that there's something else that the teachers need other than just money. And certainly, I think we all agree that teachers need to be compensated fairly, particularly their first 5 years in the industry. That's when most teachers leave. 42% of all Utah teachers leave the workforce, leave their teaching profession in the first 5 years of their employment. I think part of that has to do with training, getting them used to what the classroom is expecting and what they can expect from their classroom. So funding is an issue, but I think training new teachers is an issue as well.
So where do we get the money then to train the teachers?
Well, again, I think that last year they expanded education funding by $455 million. We do that by continuing to grow the economy.
And your ideas, Rudy?
Yes, education is on top of my platform also, and I do agree with that figure of 42% leaving the education field, either to go to other states or to other professions. That is a shame because the state does put a fair amount of money into student educators. We have the largest class size in the nation. We spend the least amount per student of anybody in the nation, and we're in the bottom third in terms of teacher compensation. We need to spend more money on education to attract the best qualified teachers and keep them in the profession. This whole concept that happened about a week or two ago in terms of allowing educators to teach our students without even having a degree in education really flies in the face of everything that we've learned over the last century or so, in that teaching is not a natural skill. You have to learn how to teach.
Tim, how do you feel about that, about having non-certified teachers in the classroom?
I think that the legislature and the state school board looked at it as an interim fix. I don't know that there was another solution because we do have such a great teacher shortage in the state. Even if we were to just throw money at the problem, it wouldn't fix it immediately. So I think that this was just a short gap measure and there is a path for those teachers who they do hire who have degrees, they just don't have a teaching certification, that over the next 3 years of teaching, they can acquire that certificate. I do want to point out one thing, though, if I can add. There was a study done over a 34-year period where per-student spending more than doubled. It went from $4,000 to $9,300. It's a nationwide study. Over that same 34-year period, test scores did not budge 0.1%, and graduation rates actually went down 0.1%. So while money is part of the problem, money will not solve this education problem alone.
I was going to ask you, though, Rudy, I mean, because are you just the tax and spend Democrat here? Because if you say we need to put more money into education, does that mean we raise taxes, or what do you take it away from?
There's a lot of sources of money. When we look at things such as the $14 million that's being spent for the state takeover of federal lands, we can find $53 million for coal ports. We can offer Facebook a $250 million tax rebates. We don't collect money on internet sales. Our fossil fuel royalties are below comparable states. And What I would suggest is, in terms of the progressive tax, yes, we are making more more money now, but it is because the economy has been expanding and there are more people here. I would suggest a tax plan which actually reduces taxes on about 90%. It reduces or keeps taxes equal on about 90% of our citizens and puts the burden on those that have benefited most from the society and education in particular.
Tim, your response, sir?
Several things. First, that $53 million was not spent by the legislature. It was a loan, which didn't happen to go through because the state of California nixed that deep coal port. But that $53 million was being paid right back from coal royalties. So that $53 million was never spent. The $14 million is an erroneous number. So far, the state legislature has only appropriated $6 million to fight that cause, $2 million about 3 years ago and $4 million this last session. Of that $6 million, only $900,000 has been spent. So if we're going to throw around numbers about where we've taken money away from education, we need to be accurate with it, and those numbers just aren't true. And as far as Facebook goes, I would be opposed to that Facebook bill, but the state school board was in favor of it and contributed heavily to the $250 million that we're discussing here.
I'd like to get back to some of those issues you raised, but first back to education. Both Craig Powell and Mel Brown, who have served us and are not returning to the legislature, have done a great job protecting the capital budgets in both South Summit and Wasatch counties. How do you feel about equalizing capital funds? Both of you would be rookies, and how do you ensure that the powerful Senator Howard Stevenson don't walk all over you? Because he is the number one equalization supporter in the state.
Right. Okay. Concept of equalization is we have some wealthy counties in Utah, and we have some poor counties in Utah. There needs to be some assistance provided to the poor counties.
And we do that currently.
And we do
through
that
the maintenance and operation
that
budgets.
That is absolutely correct, and I would be in favor of sustaining that.
What about the capital budgets? Because those are that's the budget that's been coming under attack the last several years.
I don't have an answer for the capital budget. I'd have to think that one out.
Tim?
I think, and I may be wrong on this, but I think there are 41 school districts in the state. And if you look at those 41, Wasatch School District and Park Cities are in the top four as far as being the wealthiest amongst the school districts. To penalize those two districts because other counties or districts are being funded less, some of that is, as you brought up, has been made up by the legislature. Because the legislature does not divvy up the money equally from its $4.5 billion. A lot of that is made up by the local property taxes and other sources of revenue. So I would not be in favor of taking money from Park City and Wasatch County and giving it to Iron County.
Yeah, and again, my comment that both of you would be rookies going there, you would be up against some challenging people.
You mentioned Howard Stevenson, and I was in a committee meeting with him yesterday, the tax and rev meeting. And I did watch as he used his experience on some of the legislators who were less experienced than him. And the only thing I could say, and I'm sure Rudy would give a similar answer, but yes, we will both be inexperienced. But I think if we go there with principle and with a determination to vote based on what our constituents want us to vote and how our principles align with those opinions, we should be able to stand up to any legislator and not have a problem.
Any addition to that, Rudy?
No, I agree. There's 70-some-odd legislators there, and we all have one vote.
It's 10:35 here. You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW. We'll be back.
Tell businesses you heard them on KPCW. Let local stores, restaurants, and services know their support of local public radio means something to you by letting them know you heard their spot on KPCW. Check out more than 140 businesses and nonprofit organizations that support KPCW through underwriting by clicking on the Community tab on kpcw.org. Listen like a local, shop like a local, support like a local with KPCW.
The time is now 10:35. Welcome back to Utah Politics Now. This is a new public affairs show on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley with co-host Leslie Thatcher. This is our inaugural show, and joining us in studio this morning, we have the candidates for House District 54. These are the two men who want to replace Craig Powell, who is not running for re-election. We have Republican Tim Quinn with us and Democrat Rudy Kohler. Thanks again for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
We've had a good discussion for the first half hour of this show. Let's start it all up again by talking about the environment. We see it in Salt Lake City and Cache County every January. It's an inversion so thick you don't know there are mountains around you. And there can be times in Park City where you can be on the mountain skiing and you see the Snyderville Basin filled with haze. The Wasatch, the Heber Valley, is now starting to see some air pollution creep up from the Utah County area. In fact, Wasatch County just put in their first air quality control monitor. So we'll start with you, Tim. What are your solutions to reduce air pollution in Utah?
Well, I was down at the interim meetings yesterday at the state capitol, and I listened to Representative Handy talk about he had just come from a meeting with the an agency that has to do with environment. And since 1952 to the present day, 64 years, they reported that our air is cleaner now than it ever has been since 1952. A lot of the inversion, a lot of the haze that we see, I know just yesterday or the day before in Heber Valley there was haze and it was due to wildfires. They talked about many of the particulates that are in our sky come from wildfire. A lot of the particulates that are in our sky, particularly in the winter, come from California. I'm sure Colorado would say that theirs comes from us, but so a lot of it is things that we can't control, things that we can't fix. The one thing I wouldn't want to do is overregulate businesses with environmental concerns that I don't think are as necessary as others do that would restrict their ability to hire and create jobs for Utahns. I think if you look back, I mentioned this in another debate, in 1970 when the first Earth Day came online, they were concerned about the Earth being too cool. Then in the 1980s, they said, no, we got it wrong. Now the Earth is too hot. And then in the early 2000s, they said, well, we're not sure which it is. We're just going to call it climate change. So even those who propose that humans are destroying the climate can't even figure out how we're destroying it.
So do you think we have a climate change issue?
I think that we're in a cycle, and I think the climate changes over centuries constantly. I think that humans certainly need to help preserve the beauty that surrounds us, our water and our air. But I don't think that we go to extreme measures and we punish businesses. Certainly, there are polluters, and we need to make sure that they stop and are forced through statutes to keep the waterways and the air clean. But I think that the other side of this equation is that sometimes we want to punish them too much at the expense of a problem that isn't as big as others make it out to be.
Rudy Kohler?
Yes, climate change is real. You know, we just can't deny that 97% of climate scientists. I'm an engineer, and I have looked at the data both in terms of temperature measurement and in terms of CO2 content in the air. We're exceeding over 400 parts per million now, which has never happened in the last hundreds of thousands of years that we've been that high in the amount of CO2. That's one of the greenhouse gases. So that's a real problem. That's very separate, though, than the clean air problem. The clean air problem is something that can be solved and can be solved here in Utah. Most of the emissions that are causing the polluted air, both in the Heber Valley and in the Wasatch Front, are from automobile emissions. There are many states that are adopting higher automobile emission standards than Utah. We can do the same. Also, emissions are coming from commercial and residential areas, things as trivial as hot water heaters. There's nothing preventing us from adopting codes and such which require higher efficiency furnaces and hot water heaters to reduce this emission.
And Tim, you have a response to that?
No, I don't think anyone in this listening audience would challenge the fact that this administration's EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, is one of the most liberal that we've seen in decades, if not ever. And in the meetings yesterday, we discussed that Utah is compliant and oftentimes more compliant with every EPA regulation that has been issued. And that as those EPA regulations change, we will continue to be compliant with it. So Utah is not out of sync here. We're in line with one of the most liberal EPAs in the history of that agency.
Moving on, in Colorado, they have the real estate transfer tax. That raises millions of dollars for open space. Here in Park City, years ago, the school district implemented a school impact fee to help pay for the double-digit growth that we were experiencing at the time. That was later shot down by the Utah legislature. All of the money had to be refunded. Tim, you say you will fight for less intrusive government. Does it go so far as to say that you will help local communities approve local impact fees to pay for the growth that's on their doorstep, especially you guys there in Wasatch County?
Yeah, and I think there is a fine line between what the state legislature should do and what they should allow smaller municipalities, counties, and cities to be able to do within their jurisdictions. As far as the specific of a transfer tax, Again, I was in the lending business for 23 years. We operated in 35 of the 50 states. I saw states where transfer taxes were burdensome for people as they sold a home and moved to a different home. So I would not support a transfer tax at all. But again, there is a fine line between what the state should do and what they should allow. You talked about less intrusive government. I think that government is best that's closest to the people. And when a city or a county wants to implement certain things, I think that we need to be careful as a state legislature not to impede upon their rights.
So had you been a legislator back then, you would have said impact fees are okay if the community says they are.
I would have looked at that particular issue and how they were raising funds and who that impact fee was impacting. But more than likely, I would agree with a city and a county.
Yeah, it was on all new homes built, and it wasn't, horrendous. I mean, maybe a $1,000, $2,000 or something.
Yeah, I would have to look at the particular issue, but that's it in a general statement.
How about you, Rudy?
Yeah, I do have a problem with the current legislative law that prohibits communities from charging impact fees. Nobody questions when a developer comes into an area, they have to pay an impact fee to cover the cost of utilities and roads and such for that particular development. But if a developer comes into an area and brings in X amount of children and you need new classrooms and such, there needs to be a responsibility placed on the developer to assist the community in paying for those new classrooms. It just isn't fair to put the cost burden of the developer's profits and such, to put that cost burden on the existing members of the community.
Let's move on to federalism. Utah spent about $950,000 so far preparing the lawsuit against the federal government to take back federal lands in Utah. So far, $6.5 million have been appropriated for that effort. Attorneys have told lawmakers this week that initial worst-case predictions are that the lawsuit could cost $14 million. They also predicted...
They were saying that that's probably too high.
Too high,
as you mentioned, Tim. Yeah.
And so, Rudy, let's start with you. You're the Democratic candidate for this office. Your reaction to this lawsuit, do you support it?
Certainly. I don't know why we're considering that $14 million as being too high. That was the original estimate. I haven't heard any estimate for the total cost being any less than that. Yes, the numbers we've spent right now have been relatively low, but we're still going ahead with the lawsuit. I think this is a frivolous lawsuit. The legislators' own lawyers have said that this is a frivolous lawsuit and doesn't stand a chance of winning. I am opposed to this effort. The lands that we're trying to take over belong to all of us, Utahns as well as the rest of Americans. It is just wrong to take land from other people.
Tim Quinn, Republican candidate.
The worst case number, as mentioned, was $13.8 million, and that was based on certain contingencies and certain things not going absolutely worst case. Again, as I was in those interim meetings yesterday, there were many of my hopefully future colleagues, Republican legislators, who said that it better not ever approach $13.8 million. And again, they've only appropriated, you said 6.5. The number I heard yesterday was 6 million, and we've spent a little over 900,000 thus far. But I think it is a worthwhile effort. Rudy talks about this land is all of our land. Well, where's my land in New York and my land in Illinois and my land in Georgia? This is only a Western issue. Utah, 66% of our land is owned by the federal government. Nevada, 81% of their land is owned by the federal government. When Illinois was made a state, just prior to it being made a state, 99% of it was owned by the federal government. Today, less than 1% is owned by the federal government. So if this is all of our land, why do we not have that same benefit in the states east of the Rockies? This is a Western issue, and the land ought to come back to us.
I guess, Rudy?
Yeah, I'd like to address that. I am originally from New York. I had a home up in what is called the Adirondack Park. New York is recognizing the fact that it should have held more land aside for recreational use. Now we have to buy that land from private landowners. It's costing the taxpayers a great deal of money. So it was a mistake that the East made. They recognize it, and it's a very costly mistake they're trying to remedy.
But here's the point. Rudy himself just said New York realizes that it made a mistake. That's fine. New York is its own state. This ought not to be a decision made by the federal government.
The best, maybe the most humorous, I guess, reason I found for, why Utah should not take over lands, and that the example given was Utah Lake. I mean, it's if we can't even take care of what we already have, why would we, trust trust us to do any better than the federal government.
I'm assuming you're talking about the algae bloom.
Yeah.
and that algae bloom was caused by several conditions. The point is, we know that the federal government has failed us over and over and over again. I mentioned in a previous debate, Rudy talked about, well, the federal government's never reneged on a commitment that it's made. Social Security tax has been raised 16 times since it came into effect. It's easy not to fail your constituency when you have an unlimited source of revenue to do so. The post office has no competition, yet it's bankrupt. VA hospital systems, totally ran by the government. It is disgraceful what it does for our veterans. So I have no faith in the federal government running anything. Again, I think that government closest to the people is the government. Thomas Jefferson said, that government which governs the least governs the best, and I feel the same way.
Any follow-up, Rudy?
Yeah.
Just a reminder, though, the phone lines are open. If you have a question for either Rudy Kohler or Tim Quinn, we'll take your phone calls. It's 435-655-8255.
Sure. When we're addressing specific issues like Social Security, yes, Social Security rates have gone up, but so have the benefits. So it's really you have to look at both. Getting back to the to this federal lands, when we see costs and such as firefighting, one major firefighter fire in state lands, if Utah owns the current federal lands, would cost more than the Utah legislature, I think, would be willing to pay for. Right now, these types of costs are borne by the federal government and will continue to be so.
Do we have any callers yet? 435-655-TALK. That's 435-655-8255. We're talking to the candidates for the Utah House District 54. One of these men will succeed Craig Powell in our Utah State Legislature, representing Summit Counties and Wasatch Counties. If you have questions for them, call 435-655-8255. Tim Quinn, you were going to say something.
Rudy talked about the benefits in Social Security have risen. Those benefits have only risen based on the CPI. It's a cost of living index. Just as those benefits have risen just to keep up with inflation, the input, if we had left a percentage alone from where it started at 1%, those dollars in real terms would have risen too just because of inflation. We have actually had a tax increase 16 times to keep up with Social Security.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW. It's 1048. We have a call. Caller, you're on the line. Your question?
My question is, I'd like the opinion of each of the candidates on the decision taken to hire a very expensive out-of-state law firm to do an analysis on what most people believe is actually that's not constitutionally possible, that is returning these lands, which the state frankly doesn't own at this point, to the state. Why wouldn't we be able to rely on our elected attorney general to make that determination? I'll take my answer offline.
Okay, thanks.
And that's what we've been discussing. I think I can't answer as to why we hired an outside law firm other than I would believe from expertise. And there are those constitutional scholars that would argue with that caller that it is constitutional that those lands would be brought back to us. In 1894, before Utah was made a state, there was a document called the Enabling Act. And in Section 9 of that act, you will find the word shall. It says that the federal government shall pay the state of Utah when these lands are disposed of, when they're sold. Well, that word shall is a big word for me. It's not may. It's not we might. It is shall. So constitutionally, there are many people on the side of this argument that the federal government should give those lands back. And there's already been precedent for it. They did it in every state up until we got to the Rocky Mountains.
And I'm guessing.
Yes, and I have also read the Enabling Act, and there's nothing in that act, absolutely nothing that states that the federal government shall return this
Section
land.
Section 9, you can look it up.
Shall return the land to the state of Utah.
No, it doesn't say shall return. It says shall pay when they dispose of the lands.
When they dispose, if they dispose.
Never use the word if. And I don't think anybody would argue that 120 years is what they meant when they said shall.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now. Caller, you're on the line.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead. Your question?
Yeah. Where do you stand on the issue of providing health care for people that can't afford it for themselves?
Rudy?
Okay. That's a good question. There's 160,000 people right now in Utah that have no health care coverage. Governor Herbert came up with a fairly decent plan that would have covered about 120,000 people. This is the Medicaid expansion part of the ACA program.
That plan was defeated by the legislature. I would have voted to affirm the Governor Herbert plan. What we have right now is really the Dunnigan plan, which supposedly is going to cover 12,000 of the most needy of the needy people, primarily newly released felons and the homeless. The fact is that Dunnigan plan will only cover 8,000 people. So we've got over 150,000 people that we, Utah, we're paying taxes to cover these people. These taxes are going to other states when they could be benefiting our own people here in Utah.
So what do we do about it?
What do we do about it? We have to affirm the ACA Medicaid expansion.
Speaking of ACA, that's what we affectionately call Obamacare. There were 23 Obamacare exchanges when this debacle started back in 2010. As of today, 18 of the 23 have failed. They've gone bankrupt. They're insolvent. And by their own estimation, the other five will be insolvent before the end of the year. I did a little research because Rudy likes to talk about other single-payer universal health care countries. The Canadian Institute of Actuarialists just came out and said that unless drastic changes are made to Canada's health care system, it will consume 100% of all the country's revenues by the year 2037. And the two options they gave were to fix the problem, we raise taxes drastically, or we start rationing care. The United States is the number one medical country in the world. We rank number one, and I can read you the top 10 if you would like. And we outpace the other top five combined do not have the medical research and the medical innovations that we do in this country. Are there problems? There are. But Medicaid expansion to the ACA program is not the way to do it. Greg Hughes, the Speaker of the House, was just at a speaker's meeting where all the speakers of the House throughout the country got together, and not one of those people who talked to him said they were having success with their Medicaid expansion because the enrollment was higher, the cost was higher, and the reimbursement from the federal government was lower than they were promised.
You're listening to you. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, I'd like to counter that. Canada spends less at a percentage of its gross domestic product than we do, roughly about two-thirds what we do. Since health care as a percentage of gross domestic product in 1960 was 5%. By 2009, it had risen to 17.3% of our total gross domestic product. Since Obamacare came into effect, we've only increased that by 0.2%. That's the lowest rate of increase for medical care coverage of any nation in the world. We're doing very well.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now. We've got a couple of calls on the line. I'm going to start with Patrick. Patrick, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to know how the candidates would legislate in comparison to Craig Powell, who has held that seat for a while. How would they compare and contrast themselves?
Okay, thank you.
I would like to have asked that caller, did he have something specific to say?
Well, I was going to say how Craig would answer it is that you're to the right of him.
I am to the right of Craig, and no one debates that. However, Craig was a Republican. He was a moderate by his own admission, a moderate Republican. He and I agree probably 60 or 70% of the time. I'm probably more fiscally conservative than he is. He was probably more adept at raising taxes. And I'm not trying to speak for Craig. I'm trying to make some assumptions to answer your caller's question. But he would probably been more adept to raise taxes to increase education. I would rather look for waste in government to increase education funding, as well as continue to grow the economy so that revenues grow and we can use those funds to increase education. But I don't know how to really answer that.
I have this is Rudy Kohler. I have the greatest degree of respect for Craig Powell, even though he was not a member of our party. I have endorsed him for his candidacy for judgeship, and I have told people on door to door and asked my volunteers to do the same that my positions and Craig Powell's positions have a great deal of overlap. But yes, Craig was a moderate Republican. I'm a bit to the left of Craig.
This is going to be our last question here. Caller, you're on the line.
Hi. What do you think the minimum wage should be and why?
Okay. Thanks for that. You want to start with that, Rudy?
I'd be glad to. Right now we have a minimum wage, and it really is not. I would like to refer to it not as a minimum wage, but as a living wage. Currently, it's $7.25 an hour. You try living in Park City or Wasatch County, or in fact any place here in Utah at $7.25 an hour. You just can't live at that kind of prices. Other states are recognizing the importance of putting money into the hands of consumers. So I would raise the minimum wage, which is good for businesses, because this money is not going to be spent overseas. It's not going to go into tax havens. It's not going to go into Italian yachts. It's going to be spent right here in Utah with local businesses. An increase in minimum wage is going to help local businesses.
Tim Quinn.
My response would be, I'm not sure that the minimum wage was ever intended to be a living wage. It was intended for teenagers to learn how to get into the workforce and to gain some skills. You know, if we raise, and let's watch Washington, let's watch New York, as these $15 an hour minimum wages start to kick in over the next several years and see what it does to business. Look here in our own local economy at McDonald's. They already have automated kiosks because they're getting prepared that if there's a federal hike in the minimum wage, they're going to replace workers with automation. That's not a secret. Businesses only have so much money to spread around. If we double the rate of minimum wage, they're going to either raise prices or they're going to lay people off. Neither one of those things are good.
We're coming up on 10:57. We're going to start our closing statements in about 15 seconds. While our candidates prepare that, just a reminder to our listeners that we have mail-in voting this year, and you're going to be getting ballots in the mail starting in mid-October. And Election Day is November 8th. Those ballots need to be postmarked by November 7th. We found out that rural Utahns, it takes a little longer to get that in. So anybody listening to this broadcast, and if these are one of the men that you're going to be voting for, here are their closing statements. Rudy Kohler, we'll start with you.
Okay. I'd like to conclude by thanking you for taking the time to listen and to be involved in our community in the upcoming election. It's important to me to be available to you. I'm sincerely interested in knowing what you think. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to call, email, or visit me. I believe that together we can cultivate a Utah that both nourishes a competitive workforce with self-reliant wages, ensures all Utahns have access to quality health care, protects our recreational areas, invests in the state's future by demonstrating that education is our top priority. Thank you.
Thank you. Rudy Kohler, Democratic candidate. Now we'll hear from the Republican candidate, Tim Quinn.
I think this may be the only time I catch myself saying this, but I do agree with Rudy's last statement that education is a top priority in this state and certainly within this district, and is something that weighs heavily on the minds of all the constituents in this district. I would just encourage you to support me come this election in October and November so that we can stay on the track that we're on, that we can stay on the track for being number one in business. We can stay on the track for being number one in unemployment. We can stay on the track for encouraging businesses to locate to Utah, which increases jobs, which helps everyone in the state to provide for their families and increase funding for important issues like education. Thank you.
Okay, we want to thank our guest again, Republican Tim Quinn, Democrat Rudy Kohler. Best of luck to both of you. And a reminder that KPCW and the Park Record once again hosting a candidate forum. We've determined the date, Monday, October 17th, the place still to be determined. That forum will run from 7 to about 9:30. We're going to have a happy hour starting at 6 o'clock where we're trying to figure out the food and beverages. So we hope you'll put that on your calendar. In the meantime, you'll be listening to Utah Politics Now between now and Election Day.
That's right. We'll have a wrap-up show on November 10th, but it's every Thursday from 10 in the morning to 11 in the morning right here on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley with my co-host, Leslie Thatcher.
And we'll see you next week.
Federal, state, and local taxes will be dramatically impacted as a result of the 2016 election. HCVT is pleased to sponsor KPCW's newest program, Utah Politics Now, to keep you informed about the candidates and issues. More business and personal tax information can be found at hcvt.com.